Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, August 18th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my 47 years of doing therapy. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships. And also been using to great effect to turn any negative emotional state I have into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been given. You can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click and download, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You may also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. When you click on that, it will let you have access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because it usually promotes comments and questions and testimonials. And if you have any of those for us, give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1, and it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I will announce you by your area code. Alternatively, you can email Jeannie at jeanie@whyagain.org, or you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and we will do our best to address your comments or questions or testimonials in the show, and then you can listen to it on the archives if you're not able to join us live. So we're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and today is the 230th day of the year, and that means lesson 230, which reads, Now will I seek and find the peace of the Creator. The commentary reads, In peace I was created, and in peace do I remain. It is not given to me to change myself. How merciful is God that when he created and gave me peace, he gave me peace forever. Now I ask to be what I am. And can this be denied me when it is forever true? No, it must be allowed. Father, I seek the peace you gave me as mine in my creation. What was given then must be here now, for my creation was apart from time and still remains beyond all change. The peace in which your offspring has been born into your mind is shining there unchanged. I am as you created me. I need but call on you to find the peace that you gave. It is your will that gave it to your offspring. Pam Grout's Course in Miracles Experiment book, Lesson 230, is titled Two Thumbs Up. She quotes Roger Ebert, who said, all is one. The sun, stars, rain, you, me, everything, all one. Pam writes, famous movie pundit Roger Ebert never copped to believing in God. He spent hours and hours in churches all over the world pray, but to gently nudge his thoughts toward wonder and awe. Before he died of cancer on April 4, 2013, he wrote a note to his wife about visiting another realm. At first, she thought he was hallucinating, maybe suffering from too many meds. But he was adamant. Life as we know it, quote, is all an elaborate hoax, close quotes. That's what he told her. He described a vastness beyond imagination, a place where past, present, and future all happen at once. Lesson 230 tells us Ebert's vision isn't, quote, fake news, close quotes, but it is the absolute truth beyond my meaningless imaginings. Now will I seek and find the peace of the Creator. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. We can entertain your comments or questions. We had a support group last night. We had, I think it was 4 people plus me, might have been 5 people plus me. And we had a discussion, and we listened to the half an hour with Susan Bingham's questions from Monday. And we had in-depth comments and questions from several of our members about things that are going on in their lives and how to make sense of the use of these principles when it seems directly contradictory to what the culture would train me to do. So, you know, one of the things that was addressed in that commentary was that in that half an hour that was presented, and now it's available as a highlight show on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website, 30-minute segment of our Monday show, we only addressed certain aspects of that situation, and there's all kinds of other aspects of that situation that might be addressed. If I'm dealing with my children, if I'm dealing with my grandchildren, if I'm dealing with other people in the workplace, what was addressed in that first, in that 30 minutes and the questioning and comments was just about my side of the equation, my part of identifying my emotions whenever they go tight or tense or negative anyway, identifying them sooner and sooner in the process, and then taking 100% responsibility, not for everything that's going on in the interaction, but 100% responsibility for what I'm creating in my emotional state. And, you know, there's all kinds of other aspects to that interaction between Susan and her grandson that we didn't address because they would be secondary or tertiary to first, if I'm there and I'm triggered to upset, I need to understand that I'm not perceiving anything accurately when I'm upset. And whatever I might be perceiving accurately is, at best, only a partial truth of that situation. And any action I might take from that negative emotional state is going to be, well, let's just say extraordinarily limited in its effectiveness and perhaps even counterproductive, simply because I'm not seeing the whole picture and or I'm not seeing accurately whatever it is I can see. So we have, in this work, been given the gift of questioning. We've been asked to question everything, to choose, to notice when we're living from belief and understand from our observations of our lives that that is not the most productive way to live a human life on this planet. If I'm living from belief, I'm living from old thoughts, I'm living from conditioned patterns, and those patterns were taught to me and conditioned into me by people who didn't have any more of an idea of what was going on in this world than I do. They were conditioned by their wounded parents, et cetera, et cetera. So far more useful than a belief is learning to live from observation. And that's quite a challenge for those of us who spent the first few decades of our lives being conditioned to believe that we should fight and die for our beliefs, that we should label our beliefs as more valuable than someone else's, that we should identify ourselves and our membership in groups based on belief. And, you know, the difficulty there is once I start identifying myself as belonging to one group or another, I'm in that process without really realizing it. I'm creating another layer of separation between myself and somebody else. You know, the more I identify as being part of this group or that group, the more I add energy to the thought that I am not a part of this other group, whichever other group or groups might be out there. And that pattern of thought, the more I pour my conscious logical energy into it, is going to generate more and more emotions. My personal experience is that the vast majority of those emotions that get generated by my beliefs are negative emotions, not the positive ones, not the productive ones, not the ones that lead me to a clear, broad, deep perception of the actuality of life, but rather it is those beliefs lead me to a pile of negative thoughts, and the more of my mental energy I pour into those negative thoughts, the more I generate negative emotions, the more distorted my perception becomes, the more the actions I take lead to more and more problems rather than resolutions to problems. So we are here to support people in learning the use of these tools, so that we can, at an earlier and earlier point in the process, interrupt the process that is internal to each of us and dismantle the negative emotions that we are experiencing so that our perception clarifies and so the options that we see have a potential to be far more productive and far more effective in leading us to a healthier, happier life, leading us to more peace, more compassion, more joy, more aliveness. And if you're interested in that, give us a call. We'll share with you what we know. We'll share with you what's been working for us. 563-999-3581. When you call that number and press 1, it'll let me know you want to chat or make a comment. And we'd be happy to have you do that because that makes it easier for us to live into our intention with this work. What's that? Our intention with this work is to be of service. How can we be of service to you today? I was having a conversation with a patient earlier today about a negative belief pattern she became aware of, or that she's beginning to become aware of. And the roots of that negative belief pattern, we don't know yet, but the fruit of it is she has a set of understandings that her value only comes from what she can do for others and or how much money she can produce. And I don't know about you, but I have run into that as a very common false belief that many people in this culture struggle with or operate from. And so we're encouraging people to understand that that's a false belief, that you have value, and you have value simply because you're alive. Michael Rice would say, simply because the Creator put the breath of life in you. And the trap that we create when we begin to believe that our value is directly dependent upon what we can do for others or how much money we can produce is particularly insidious. It's particularly difficult to crack because it's so close to what the culture would want us to believe, because the culture then, it makes it easier for the culture to motivate us to be good consumers or to get a certain kind of education so that we can, you know, get a certain kind of job to keep the economy running. And that's more what the culture values. But that's not necessarily what the individual will value and what will be of value for the individual. This is why we find so many people who are depressed and suicidal and feeling helpless and hopeless, because they've mistaken the false beliefs they've been programmed with as the truth. And at one level or another, they're believing that their only value comes from how much they can produce or how much money they can make, and that they don't have value within their relationships or their families unless they're actively doing things to make other people's lives better and, you know, doing housework or doing chores. And that false belief creates a very potent trap. And that's why we have, Michael Rice talks about, we have people who are human doings, and they're not really human beings. They're not really well-versed in or comfortable sitting with being. You know, just feeling good about themselves and their lives just because they're here. And that's what we'd like to help you do. We would like to assist you in removing everything that's less than love from your system, whether it's a negative belief about your value being tied to how much you do for others or how much money you make, or whether it's, you know, a whole boatload of false beliefs and traumatic energies that came from an earlier time in your life, and now they get activated into activity soon and often every time you get out of the bed and go off on into the world. And we have tools that can help you dismantle those energies and the false beliefs that are connected to those energies, and we'd be happy to discuss them with you and or coach you through them. at 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, let us know how we can be of service to you today. I have a prep call for another interview coming up later today. The interviews that are done mostly for the JourneysDream.org website and the On Your Mind podcast hosted by JourneysDream.org. And yet some of them find their way into this podcast and the Mind Shifters radio show. And if you have an idea about someone we could connect with, a book we should read, a person we should interview, please give us a call and let us know. Or drop me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And we'll do our best to reach out to those people. Susan Bingham gave us another lead yesterday. There's a medical doctor who had her own medical challenges, and the conventional approach was completely dead-ended and couldn't help her. And so she started her own journey in searching out functional medicine and integrative approaches, and she found healing. So now she's making a commitment to promote that and teach that to people, and she's putting together, there's a Facebook page or a Facebook group, and from there she's going to be launching a website that's a membership-based site where people are going to be able to pay this membership fee and then get access to the what she's hoping will be very powerful, informative, and transformative experts and interviews with experts from various fields. So if you know someone like that, give us a call or shoot us an email. Let us know who you think we should be adding to the list of interviewees. I've also got two people coming up that I'm scheduled to be interviewing who have had their own experiences. They're called, lived experienced people. So they're had the label of a mental health disorder and or they've been hospitalized and forced to take medications they didn't want to take and or they're living with mental health challenges and they're learning how to be highly effective, efficient members of society even though they've got a list of symptoms that could earn them a whole host of diagnoses through the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is the reference book for psychology and psychiatry deciding what label to give something. So a lot of the work we do in the Journey Stream work, a lot of the work we do here on Mind Shifter Radio is based on the observation that there's very serious limitations to the good that comes from labeling something as a diagnosis or a disorder or a disease. And so from the functional medicine approach and or the holistic or integrative approach, what most often is far more useful is looking at the whole person as a system, looking at a variety of systemic ways to induce healing rather than simply treat symptoms. And as I mentioned, you can find a whole host of those. I think we've approached 70 interviews we've done so far for the On Your Mind podcast hosted by Journey's Dream. And that's JourneysDream.org/podcast is the easiest way to find that. I'm looking forward to interviewing even more people. on that list and getting your suggestions. Who would you like to see us interview? Who do you know who has had significant mental health challenges and they remain highly functional in their lives? Who do you find as an inspiration? You can give us a call at 563-999-3581 or shoot us an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. I'm hoping later today to talk with Katera Aslami Tamplin, who's from the Alameda County Behavioral Health Care Services, and she's the manager of their Office of Consumer Empowerment, and talk about peer-run support and peer-driven hospice houses or respite houses and a tremendous movement that's happening throughout New York and in other states where they are creating and implementing models of compassionate care. So rather than simply throwing a label on somebody and filling them with meds and locking them in a warehouse somewhere, they're using people who've been through similar circumstances, who get special training in listening and deep connecting with people, and they're intervening in people's lives sooner before they go to the jail, before they go to the mental health emergency room or the emergency room of a local hospital. And they work with the individuals as individual people with individual needs and resources and strengths from a strength-based model. And they're getting phenomenally good results. They're saving millions of dollars. They're probably saving hundreds of thousands of lives. And it's by moving away from our conventional medical model that says, list the symptoms and then match the symptoms to the drug you need to give and move on. The more we move away from that, the more we recognize that people are social creatures, they're complex creatures, they've got tremendous strengths and resources. Human beings function better when they've got a sense of community, a sense of love in their life, a sense of purpose. They feel, you know, that they're contributing to their world, their social world, etc. They've got basic nutrition, basic sleep hygiene. They're trained about how to use their breath. They're getting some level of healthy movement in their lives. Some would call it exercise, but even just movement is one of the big things. We're inhabiting these physical bodies that were basically designed to walk, to keep moving, to be standing and walking. And yet most of us these days in the Western world are living lives that are so much more sedentary than that, that it's counterproductive to our health. And if you go to a functional medicine trained practitioner, he or she will understand all of that is part of the assessment. They're not just going to be clicking off a list of symptoms and putting check marks on the list, and if you get enough of those check marks, then they give you a diagnosis, and then from there they decide what medication to give you. That won't happen if you go to a functional medicine practitioner. And the more we do that, the more we educate more and more people about the fact that there is a different approach to practicing medicine. And these are actual medical doctors. They're trained the same way as the current conventional doctors are trained. However, for various reasons, like Dr. Mark Hyman or this physician that Susan Bingham was introducing us to yesterday, whose name escapes me for now. But each of them have had their own physical health problems that were so intense that there was nothing in the conventional model that could help them. So they exhausted the resources within the pattern of creating a diagnosis and then giving it medication or creating a surgery regimen for it. And as a result of that, they began to explore other options. So this physician, I believe her name is Kristen Clague, C-L-A-G-U-E, Reihman, R-E-I-H-M-A-N. And her Facebook group, which is right now just kind of an intro and an informational page for the Healing Grove website or the Healing Grove community that she's creating and offering a membership to for a fee. But that's if you go to Facebook and you search for Healing Grove Community or the Healing Grove Community. You can find out about it and you can ask to join and then you'll get updates. And that's Dr. Kristen Clague Reihman. So if you've got an idea like that, someone similar, or you've read a book with someone that heard a story about someone who's learned to heal differently than the conventional medical model, let us know. We're always open to learning about these things and perhaps even interviewing them. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and we've got about 25 minutes left. What's on your mind? What would be useful for you, a useful way to spend the next 25 minutes? I've mentioned recently that I've been going through the book Awareness. It's written by Anthony DeMello, one of my favorite authors, even though he died young and he is not producing any new material. He has the book Taking Flight and the book Awareness, and both of these are have been so beneficial to me that I go back through them once or twice a year, depending upon the year. And there are stories in the Taking Flight book. It's a book of story meditations. And the book Awareness by Anthony DeMello is literally just transcripts of workshops that he's done where he's shared his very practical insight to these deep spiritual wisdoms. So area code 858, you're in the air. Who do we have? All right, I will mute that person since they weren't responding. Maybe it was an accidental pressing of number one. Area code 858, if you do want to speak, please press one twice. That'll take the question mark away and then put it back up, and I'll be happy to turn on your microphone if you have a question or a comment for us. One of the stories that Anthony DeMello was telling in the book Awareness is he ran into a Jesuit who had probably been 40 or 50 years in the priesthood. And this man said that he had, in all of his time as a priest, 40 or 50 years, whatever it was, he had never once missed his morning prayer session. And Anthony DeMello was trying to highlight the fact that that's just a piece of knowledge. It's just a fact. It's not good or bad. As a matter of fact, it might be quite unhealthy. It might be that this is an obsession that this person had, and that he didn't really have any choice about missing it. Just like, you know, when there's a person who has a problem, obsessive compulsive disorder, a certain aspect of that might be hoarding, and it's based on a rigid approach to dealing with internal pain, fear, anxiety. And so those are people, the people who do, dysfunctional hoarding, they don't feel like they have any choice. And that was Anthony DeMello's point in this story, is that if this person was just doing their morning prayer every morning for 40-some years simply because they were told they had to, if they were doing it just as this rote repetition of words, it was probably worse than neutral. It was probably a sign of a serious problem. You know, there are stories in Jesus literature about the Pharisees and that wanted to, you know, prosecute him because he helped a man get his donkey out of a ditch on the Sabbath. And there's this rigid interpretation of a rule that says, you know, no work on the Sabbath, that would say, oh, you got to let the donkey die. You got to let the man suffer. Because you helping the man get his donkey out of the ditch is work. And that's against the laws of, you know, this religion. Well, that's rigidity that's detrimental. So someone who's committed, someone who says, I so enjoy my morning prayer, it is so beneficial to me to do this, that I do everything I can to make it happen. And so far in this many years, I've been able to do it. That's different from somebody who says, I'm told that in order to be a good servant of God or a good priest or a good whatever, a good cleric, I need to do these morning prayers, and so I'm going to do them come hell or high water. Chances are pretty good that that's more of a compulsion and less healthy than someone who misses every once in a while their morning prayers. One of the more useful concepts in the pursuit of getting the doctorate was this whole idea that it's our balance between loosey-goosey, no boundaries, and rigidity. And somewhere in the middle, there's this healthy flexibility that defines what it means to be a healthy person. So if I have, you know, let's say I'm in the priesthood and they say, you know, every morning you've got to do these prayer devotions from, you know, 5 a.m. to 6 o'clock or whatever. And I find myself in a situation where whether I'm in a monastery or I'm in a parish or I'm, you know, living with a community where I'm doing some mission work, and I get up one morning and I start preparing to do my morning prayer, and there's a sick child that needs attending. And the parents are, you know, swamped with dealing with four or five other children. And I am so rigid that I say I can't help you until after 6 o'clock because I have to do my morning prayers. Well, that's not healthy. that's not in my best interest, and that's not in the best interest of those, the family members who have the child or the child, his or herself. So, you know, at the same time, that thing we're describing here is flexibility, I might use it as an excuse to only pray one or 2 days out of a month. And that's not healthy either. If every time I have a thought that, well, you know, maybe it's okay if I miss, and I'm missing more days in my prayer devotions than I'm attending, then that's too loose. How do you determine it? Well, what's too rigid and what's too loose? The model for this set of teachings is based on observation. And there's an admonition in some of the Jesus teachings that say, how will we know if somebody's doing the right thing? How will we know if they're doing their work? And the answer was, you look at their fruits. You directly observe the effects of the choices. So how will I know if I'm being too rigid? I look at the effects. How will I know if I'm being too loose? I look at the effects. If it's to my benefit to loosen up a bit, then I loosen up a bit. If when I loosen up a bit, I don't like the way it affects my thought process or my actions or my ability to maintain my emotional balance, then I tighten it up a bit. So this is all in line with our observation that it is highly preferable to learn to live in the moment, directly in the moment, rather than try to let my actions be determined by some adherence to a belief system. Because as Krishnamurti points out, belief, the past experience and the belief is old thought. It's dead. It's from the past. And Michael Rice has a whole riff he does on this definition of Satan. And basically, it's living from the past. It's living from a belief. It's living from conditioned thought rather than being awake and aware and actively observing in the moment. So the more we can do as individuals to live in the moment, to question actively, to catch any belief that we find active in our minds, and to pause long enough to make sure that any action we're taking is connected to direct observation in the moment rather than being driven by a belief, the more we can do that, the better our lives are going to get. That's the promise. That's the observation that most of us have made. And that's, you know, the core we'll say one of the core tenets of this work. Now, what's a tenet? Well, it's a thought process that we want to keep checking out in the moment with direct observation. We don't want to blindly follow it because that's creating a different belief. If I say over and over again that, you know, living by observation is always better than living from belief, well, then I've created another belief system. But if in the moment I take a breath, and I scan my body and I refuse to act from the place where there's a negative emotion active in my mind or a negative thought recurring, and I do my work, you know, like I tend to my own garden, as the old adage would say, and I dismantle the negative emotional state, which is always going to create a distortion in my perception. There's this, you know, the idea that I'm going to follow a belief rigidly, the idea I'm going to follow the letter of the law. without understanding the spirit of it, allows me to do harm to myself and others. One of the stories from that book, Taking Flight, is there's this mullah, his name is Nasruddin, and he found a diamond by the roadside. And according to the law, finders become keepers only if they first announce what they found in the center of the marketplace on three separate occasions. Now, this Nasruddin guy was too religious-minded to disregard the law. He was also too greedy to risk losing his diamond. So, on three separate consecutive nights, when he was sure that everyone was fast asleep, he went to the center of the marketplace and quietly, in a soft voice, he announced, "I have found a diamond on the road that leads to town. Anyone knowing the owner should contact me at once." And then he left. No one was the wiser for the mullah's words, of course, except one man who happened to be standing at his window on the third night, and he heard the mullah mumble something. And he went to Nasruddin and he said, "Hey, what were you talking about there?" And Nasruddin said, "I am in no way obliged to tell you, but this much I shall say. Being a religious man, I went out there at night to promote certain words in fulfillment of the law." The moral of this story is, if you're living by belief, if you're living by the letter of the law, you can be as wicked as those who completely disregard the law. You don't have to break the law. You just have to observe it to the letter of the law without any regard for the spirit. Well, most of the wars that have been fought on this planet have been fought by people who believe that their belief system entitles them to kill other human beings. If for no other reason, then those human beings have a different belief system. But as soon as we wake up to that, that for me is all the rationale I need to get myself to question every belief I hold. So, 563-999-3581, area code 858. I do not believe that you have pressed 1 twice. I think you're still up there as a false positive. And so we have time. We have about 10 minutes left for a conversation or a question. I will remind us that if you did not hear the show on Monday, the second half of that first hour show is available at the MindShiftersAcademy.org website on a brand new page that is now titled Best of Audio Files. And on that page there are only 2 files currently. I will probably cycle 4 or 5 key best of files through that page, making it easier to find the latest and greatest. There's also a page on that website for the books that we've discussed on this Mind Shifters Radio. And that needs a little updating. There have been 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 books that I've read and we've discussed parts of that aren't on there yet. But if you're looking for a good reading list, pretty much everyone on this list has my recommendation, including, you know, 2 or 3 books by Pema Chodron, one titled Welcoming the Unwelcome, and another one titled When Things Fall Apart. And there's a book like Anatomy of an Epidemic by Robert Whittaker, which has a whole, it's a compendium of research outlining how detrimental it is to stay on these psychiatric and psychological drugs long term. That while they might have some utility in the short term, they are not healing. They are not a solution. They are part of treating symptoms. And every one of them, as research has shown, when it's taken over the long term, has its own side effects that are negative, detrimental to the cognitive functioning of the people taking them long term. There's a book by Dr. Jody Skildacorn titled Healing Depression Without Medication. There's the book by David E. Martin, Lizards Eat Butterflies, where he talks about people want to evolve and transform from, you know, a caterpillar to a butterfly. And he says, you know, it's a better analogy to talk about lizards, because lizards are always lizards, and they just, as they grow and they outgrow their skin, they shed their skin. And so their true nature, their essence, is just getting more refined and larger. It's not that they start as one thing and end up as another. So you as a human being have this value. You have this beauty. You have this potential for creativity and aliveness and love and compassion. And you've got it from the beginning. And you can just get better and better at recognizing those potentials and those traits. And you don't have to think about becoming other than what you are. You just need to be fully, more fully, who and what you are. And so he's promoting basically the death of self-help as it's been promoted for so many years. The Gentle Art of Blessing, it's a highlight book from my time of leading a book club for 4.5 years. And I still recommend that practice to people, especially in times like this when you're half a world away from people who are in crisis and you don't have any financial resources or any plane you can hop in and go over and take them, but you can send loving thoughts. Susan, welcome.
Hey. Hi, Dr. Tim. I came on very late. We're having a large family drama. But I have a question. I have my best friend from New Haven, where I used to live, has a daughter who's been diagnosed with bipolar. She goes into these very manic-y swings, and she does self-destructive things. She's now probably 27 years old, but she's like a teenager in full hormone flux. And she was asking me about facilities and programs that could help. And I told her about NAMI, which is up there, and Journey's Dream. And she went on the Journey's Dream website and just had trouble navigating and finding what she needed. And she also found that they charge for their work, which is perfectly reasonable. But this is a family without financial resources. Her daughter has been in and out of Yale New Haven Mental Hospital. She's on heavy meds. And I wondered if you could, so what she feels she needs is a very strong support system for her daughter. While her daughter lives at home, the daughter is very much of a homebody and is afraid to go away. That doesn't mean she might not be supposed to go away or that that might not be beneficial, but I told her about the radio show, and I thought if she could just lie down and put the phone to her ear and just listen, she might start hooking in, and if she wanted to press one, she could ask a question. And my friend said, you know, that's a great idea, but she does not have the capacity to focus for more than about 5 minutes. And if she were to press one, she'd be more engaged, but she might be so disorganized that the radio host would not be able to work with her. So I'm throwing out the question, is there something you could recommend?
Well, generally speaking, and this is a very general statement, but generally speaking, when people have those kinds of, you know, mental fogginess and mood swings and there's something way off in their biology, in the energy system mm-hmm. that has to do with the mind energy, but also the biology, whether it's heavy metal toxicity or it's lack of absorption of critical nutrients. Or so, you know, just saying, hey, listen to this radio show to somebody in that state is probably not going to be as effective as helping them get an evaluation for whether they've got, you know, food sensitivities, allergies, heavy metal toxicities, complete imbalance of hormones, and, you know, their zinc and their copper might be off in proportion to, you know, really distort their ability to perceive or track things clearly. And that's why I recommend that you find a way to a functional medicine specialist. Now, if you're talking about that, you know, she's already done that kind of thing and they couldn't find anything, or they know what they need to do and she needs support, you might look into the People USA, people-usa.org. And they have programs, services, they've got crisis care, they've got People USA's Rose houses, and these Rose, R-O-S-E, houses are peer-run support houses for people as an alternative to getting thrown in jail or going to an emergency room, hospital, et cetera. And that the base of it is in New York, but you know, Steve Michio is the executive chief executive officer there in New York. But he's helped create these houses, over 40 of them, in the U.S. and other countries. So that's another good resource. There's also the website stayhereglobal.org, which is all one word. And they've got a list of providers. And these aren't necessarily people who will see anybody for free, but these are people who might be able to give you, you know, a tip about resources or and, you know, the basic the first thing I wanted to say in response to your question is, would it be beneficial for her to sit and listen to the radio show? Probably not, in the way you're describing her emotional, mental and emotional state. But it might be quite useful after she's gotten stabilized. And then if you go to the Journey's Dream website, if you want to find the podcast, you have to click on the Get Help link. And then the first option under the Get Help tab of the menu is the podcast. And there's a whole host of shows that might be useful. But that network, that provider network, the Find a Practitioner link, is in its infancy. So you'll have better help finding a practitioner if you go to sameheareglobal.org and check out their practitioner network.
Oh, good. Okay. Thanks. I took notes. Excuse me.
All right. Well,
thank you.
We have reached the end of our first hour, although we don't have anybody here with their ready to step up. Michael and Jeannie aren't on the call yet, but what were you going to say?
No, I just sneezed. Thanks, Dr. Tim. I appreciate it. I'll write this stuff down and send it to my friend.
Well, you're very welcome and deserving. One of the more interesting people who talks a very powerful game about the hormones and the balances and the supplements is Dr. Brian Ardis, A-R-D-I-S. And I ended up interviewing him twice for the On Your Mind podcast.
I remember that. Yeah.
And it's his experience that many, many of these things can be shifted and turned around and actually facilitate the body's healing, a lot of these things, with, you know, the right nutrition, et cetera.
Great. Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
All right, blessings. I will mute you and make the transition here. Jeannie Rice just got on the call. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. My apologies. It kept giving me a busy signal. I never got in.
Well, I'm glad you got in. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, August the 18th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. I'm delighted that once again we get to have this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness and the process of waking up from living from the replicant mind, waking up to the fact that we are, in truth, creatures made of the stuff called love, and how to remove from the mind those energetic dynamics that, perhaps have been passed on to us for many generations, trying to convince us that we're supposed to be functioning out of some form of hostility or fear. To move from that state of disease and decay called hostility or fear to the space where we get to thrive as human beings, as the presence of love. We are heading into a new chapter in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We're in chapter 17. And if you're following along with us, we're on page 101. The body has a mind of its own. So if you're not familiar with the book, we've got this conversation we've been having with a character named Richard. He's kind of this recalcitrant kind of guy that really doesn't want to hear anything I'm talking about, but he's going through his third divorce, and some friends say, you might find some resolution if you have a conversation with Michael Rice. So he stops on his way west. He's escaping from those women. He's taking the geographic here. He's sure that, all he has to do is get away from them. Of course, it's the third time he's done it, third wife, and still refusing to look within himself. So we're about halfway through a conversation in the book with this character who, he's not a real person, but he is a real composite of many, many different people that I've literally worked with. And the learning process of moving out of a state of hostility and fear and moving into the state where we can function, truly function as love. And so one of the things to be aware of is that generally, the world calls the functioning, and yesterday we talked about carbon-based memory, the functioning of carbon-based memory, the mind. And when in fact, it's nothing but a database, a storage system for information that operates by the law of resonance. If I say, don't think about the color of your car, what moves in your body's mind? But information about the color of your car, present a resonating frequency with something you have hostility or fear hooked to, then hostility or fear is going to move in you. And when it moves, most people call that thinking, but it really isn't thinking. It's just pure resonance, just the movement of energy. And so this so-called mind is the mind we're referring to when we say, if you really truly want to function as a human being, if you really truly want to heal, you've got to be out of your mind. So we're on page 101, and if you don't have a copy of the book and you'd like to be following along, It is out of print, but you can order copies, used copies from eBay and Amazon. They've always got usually dozens of them available for sale. And or you can go to our website, download the book free. Our website is whyagain.org. So you can go to that website and you'll see a picture of the book. Click on it and drill down and you'll find a link to download the book free. So I'm talking to this character named Richard, and we had just gone for a walk. We're ostensibly at our teaching center in the Ozarks in southern Missouri. We have a place there called Heartland. It's small property, 17 acres with 15 buildings, where we have teaching space and food preparation and accommodations. Just what used to be a small resort, about 7 miles outside of a town of 250 people. We purchased that 32, 33 years ago and converted it to a teaching center. So we've just walked down the hill to the lake and coming back up, and here's the conversation as it starts to unfold with Richard. So when we return from our walk, the focus of our discussion turned to resonance and the mind. I explained that the law of resonance is a law that governs all energy fields and is the law of energy exchange. What is resonance? Richard asked. Well, imagine I hold up a middle C tuning fork and I bring a second vibrating middle C tuning fork near it. What happens? He replies, the first fork will vibrate. I remember that experiment from physics class in high school, he answered. What if I introduce a vibrating tuning fork tuned to F? Richard correctly replies, nothing happens. The two forks are tuned to different frequencies, therefore are not in resonance with each other. The fork tuned to F will register nothing. So Richard's starting to grasp this idea of the law of resonance. Not the first time we've talked about it. So if there's no resonance, there's no energy exchange, I reply. Only when two fields are in tune or in harmony with each other is there an exchange of energy between them. When we enter each other's sphere, the stronger field transfers some of the energy to the weaker field, which is strengthened. This is the same law that governs the function of the mind, I offered. So we understand that this body-mind unit is a storage system, and resonance determines what's going to fire in the mind. When something fires in the mind, most people call what's firing, the result of that firing, thinking. And our offering is there's no thinking involved in that whatsoever. It's just pure resonance. Just like, you know, if I put the middle C tuning fork in front of a second middle C tuning fork and one of them's vibrating, when the second tuning fork responds, that second tuning fork obviously isn't thinking. All it's doing is resonating. Most people live their whole lives out of the law of resonance. And all that happens, all that moves in them, is whatever is associated in their minds with whatever the stimulus is. It's very much a stimulus response mechanism. But we're not limited to that as human beings. We have the ability to do something quite different. We have the ability, when we wake up and function beyond the content of the body's mind, to originate energetic patterns that the mind has never seen before. In that ability is thinking, and in that ability is creatorship. If we don't ever rise to the level of creatorship, then we are replicate beings. All that happens is, whatever's stored is replicated. So, you know, we have a movie storage system. Whatever movie you pull out, that whatever's on the tape, that's what's going to play. Whatever's in the file, that's what's going to show up on the screen. Or you can get your own camera and go out and write your own movie. My offering is that we as human beings are designed to be originals. We're each designed to enjoy creating an original life. And creation comes only from the level that we call being. What is this level called being? Well, you will regularly hear me talk about holding a newborn. And if you hold a newborn child and tap into the essence of that newborn, you'll notice that the essence of that newborn, and this answer comes from having asked the question of tens of thousands of people all over the globe that the newborn is the presence of love. We are all designed to function out of that and to originate from that state of being rather than replicate whatever stored in this body-mind unit from the past. If we never rise to the level of creatorship, then our lot in life is that of a replicant mind. And the book that we're reading from is really all about the replicant mind and how to escape from it. Why is this happening to me again is the essence of the replicant mind, and I feel very blessed that the universe reserved that title for me. I was actually in Fort Lauderdale, Florida back, 1995, and there was a magazine called, It was a singles magazine. I'm not remembering the name of it at this moment. And the publisher of the magazine asked if I'd write an article on relationships, and I did. And I was working on my book at the same time, so in part it was an excerpt from my book. But I went back, I mean, I can remember sitting at the kitchen table one morning going back and rereading my article. When I write, I read, I write, I rewrite, I rewrite, I rewrite. I'm a slow writer, and that's okay. And as I read the article, I had started out without being fully conscious of it with the question, why is this happening to me again? Why are all people the same? At the point where I did that, the workshop that I did based in forgiveness and the title of the book I was working on was The Miracle of Forgiveness. But as I read that opening, it was like, that's the name of the workshop. That's the name of the book. Why is this happening to me again? I checked copyright and there it was. It was wide open and available. It's like such an obvious title. I'm surprised that 1,000 people hadn't written it previously. A couple of people have picked up on it and written it, you know, similar type work since. But as long as we're stuck in this replicate mind, all we can do is reproduce what's happened in the past. I mentioned yesterday, you go back to the ancient scriptures and you hear them saying, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. Replication. A shadow. And we're not designed to live in anybody or anything's shadow. We're designed literally to originate the energetic patterns out of which we live our lives. But you can't originate if you don't go to the level where origination happens. And origination doesn't happen in the storage system. It happens in our original authentic being's ability to bring forward something never seen before. Actually, it's one of the, what I call the five smooth stones of David. And that is imagination. The ability to image in something that's never been seen before. And when we bring in a new frequency, a new energy, a new pattern, then we have the opportunity to create out of that pattern. Like, you know, there's a thought in the culture that everybody's going to die. And if you buy that, you will die. Now, perhaps you will die because that's what everybody does. That's the rule. That's just the way it works. And perhaps it won't be that you'll die because everybody's designed to die, but that you created death for yourself. So I'm going to offer a new thought in that regard. Maybe, as the physicists have told us, we are designed to be eternal. If you talk to the physicists, they'll tell you the only thing that exists is energy. If you exist, you must be energy. And what do we know about energy? Energy is eternal. It can neither be created nor destroyed. Only its form can be changed. What we call death is the changing of the form of integrated energy called human, filled with inhuman energetic patterns that cause it to break down, become non-viable, which is what we call death. What if we had the technology and the tools, and were willing to use them, to remove the frequencies of death and fear and sadness and rage and guilt and drama and trauma? What if we had the tools to remove those things, and in removing them, the only thing left was life? Now, these patterns of hostility and fear that I'm offering actually kill us are habit patterns, because they've been going on for 1,000 generations in each of our bloodlines. They've been modeled for us. And, you know, pretty much the whole world's cooperating. So most people are lost in that replicate mind that goes, oh, well, this is just the way it is. What if you were overcome? My offering is, that's a very debilitating thought. What if you were to overcome that debilitating thought and do something else? Well, let's go to the book of Revelations and see what this man Yeshua has to say about it. He says, to he or she that overcomes, they will not taste of the second death. Now, what does the second death mean? What's the first death? I would offer that each of us came into the world knowing ourselves as conscious, active, present love. If we came into a family system and a culture with brutality and violence, then probably the idea of functioning out of love was lost in the insanity of hate and fear and rage and guilt and grief and attack and trauma and trauma. And if that's the new habit of mind, then everybody in your bloodline, as in mine, over 120 years of age, is dead. But here's what Yeshua says. To he or she that overcomes, they will not taste of the second death. They will become a pillar in the temple of the Creator. Now, if you go back and read that book, you'll find that you're told your structure is the temple of the Creator. Pillar. A pillar is something strong, powerful, and permanent. So you will become a strong, powerful, permanent fixture in this body-mind unit, in this temple. So you will not taste of the second death. You will become a pillar in the temple of the Creator and shall go out no more. That's a pretty clear statement. That if you don't destroy your structure, you won't have to escape it and you won't have to leave it behind. Now, what does it take? What are you going to do that? You're going to have to stand in the base of willingness and resist the temptation to fall into greed, rage, fear, hatred, and vengeance of all sorts. You know, the root of all of that is fear. And when we start to dismantle the fear-based mind, and, you know, one of the primary drivers in this culture around the fear-based mind is that of greed. You know, just take a look around at what runs the game and look at everybody vying for the buck. Well, pardon me, not everybody. There's a lot of people waking up who are not, it's all about the buck, but are about service and living as we are designed to live and supporting others and doing the same. that's in essence what inspires this work on forgiveness. So what if you truly were able to become a pillar in your body-mind unit, a fixture, and not have to destroy another one? You'd have to overcome. You'd have to forgive. You'd have to remove all inclinations toward rage and guilt and grief, drama and trauma, hatred and fear of all sorts. Would you be willing to give that up for a literal eternal life? Now, other people say, oh, well, yeah, well, but, you know, you have to die first. It's like, you know, when I listen to Yeshua say what he says, there's no death in the plan. He will not taste. It's not required. Oh, yeah, but you have to die first. Yeah, you see, your spirit's eternal. But, well, I'm going to offer a different thought than the one that's running the billions of replicant minds on Earth today. And that is that perhaps if I do the work of forgiveness, and remember that forgiveness means remove, if I do the work of removal of hostility and fear in all of its shades and variations, perhaps I'm removing the disintegrative energies from my own tissue structure, the general generational patterns of hostility and fear. Perhaps I've overcome those, and the only energy that I feed to my structure is that of being, that of love. What if aging was not a function of time, but a function of bringing disintegrative energy into your body-mind unit? Then you'd have to be about giving up the disintegrative patterns that you bought into. And giving those patterns up is called forgiveness. Remembering that the word forgive has nothing to do with I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, but rather the word forgive is the tool with which you remove, quite literally, all hostility, rage, guilt, grief, drama, trauma, hatred, vengeance, greed. Oh, but Michael, that just sounds like too much work. Well, hey, if you get eternal life out of it, is it really too much work? If you say, well, Michael, that just sounds like a fantasy to me. Well, okay, but let's check it out. If what I'm saying is true, and I'm talking now from the perspective of my background in physics, if what I'm saying is true and you go with it, you have the opportunity to literally have an awake, aware, eternally creative life. What's the downside? Well, there's not a downside. You're going to have a pretty good time of it. If what I'm saying is false and you believe it, what's the downside? Well, I clean up my hostility and fear. I have a pretty good life, and the seemingly natural thing happens. So what have I got to lose by going with, maybe this whole death cult thing is just a cult, and maybe we don't need to buy into it? When you think of this body-mind unit as an integrated energy system, relative to it, there are primarily two basic energetic types. Integrative energy that will build it up, and there's disintegrative energy that will tear it down. My offering is wherever in tissue you put disintegrative energy, that tissue will reflect the quality of energy held in it, and it will begin to disintegrate, the end result being death. What if you entered into a different conversation? And that conversation was one that said, Yeah, I remember holding the newborn and realizing that my newborn was pure being, pure love. I don't remember that person myself, but it makes sense that if my child was that, then I must be that too. So why not go for it? Why not join a community based in love that's about bringing a shift to the world? I guarantee it's a whole lot more fun. You know, there's a great metaphor, a book that's a great metaphor for this story. It's called Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And you'll remember that there was fighting for fish heads on the beach and power in the flock, or there was magnificent unlimited flight. Pretty good metaphor. We can fight for our specks and our scraps of whatever the current money system is. You know, at this point, they're, in America at least, there are these worthless pieces of paper called Federal Reserve notes. You'll notice that those notes don't say anything about money. They speak about a private organization that prints those things that used to be symbols of money. You know, if you go back just, oh, I don't know, 60, 70 years ago, you go into a pawn shop or a store where they sell gold, silver, old bills, old coins, that sort of thing, and you'll see a time when there was a thing called a silver certificate. It looked just like a Federal Reserve note, except that it said on it silver certificate, and, you know, if there was a $1 symbol on it, it said, pay to the bearer on demand $1. Now, obviously, that piece of paper wasn't and isn't a dollar. If you're going to pay to the bearer on demand $1 in silver, if you can take that piece of paper in, then that was a symbol of money, which was silver in this case. And you could present that to the bank, and the bank would give you back a coin that weighed 377 grains of silver. It was called a dollar. But most everybody's been sold a bill of goods, and, you know, they got to the point where the symbols for the dollar, they started to think were dollars. And if you go into a store and buy a silver certificate, you can still buy them. You can go into the bank and say, hey, I have this silver certificate that says you have to give me an actual dollar. 377 grains of silver. You know what they're going to do? They're going to laugh in your face. The guys who gathered all the silver up had enough silver to buy the legislature to make it illegal to redeem great-granddaddy's silver certificate. Now you're just left with a worthless piece of paper. Where did the 377 grains of silver go? And then you realize there's a whole lot to be understood to clean up the insanity of this world and what we've been sold. So disintegrative and integrative energy, one destroys, one builds up, are the basic two qualities of energy relative to your energy system. There are things that are genuine and there are things that are fake. If you engage in a fake, you've engaged in a disintegrative energy. And when you engage in a disintegrative energy, you induce death in yourself. So our invitation is that you actually start to trade in the coin of the realm of love. And the coin of that realm is love, and stop exchanging hostility and fear with people.
Well, Michael, if I didn't have my hostility and my fear and my sarcasm and my rage, I would never know how to talk to anybody. Well, then maybe it would be best to keep your lips sealed until you learn to function as and out of your original true creative nature, which is love.
the tools we provide in this work are to do exactly that. And if you're out there in listener land and that makes sense to you, or perhaps it doesn't make any sense and you have questions, you have objections, you have like, wait a minute, Michael, what are you talking about? Then now's the time to push one on your telephone. And when you do, that will raise a hand in the control panel that Miss Jeannie's running. And she will introduce you by your area code and we'll be having a conversation. And I would love to open the space for conversation. Miss Jeannie, do you have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
We do have a hand up, and I believe it's Patrick, area code 727.
Oh,
you're on the air.
Hi.
Well, hey there, Dr. Patrick. How are you, sir? You're loud and clear.
I'm good. Good.
How are things in Florida?
Very interesting. Depends on the viewpoint of which I stand and whether I move to the left or the right, then it all looks very different. Nice and warm right now. Beautiful sky, absolutely beautiful. Ultra blue with bright white clouds. Oh, nice. And then looking up that way, I can see all the beautiful trees.
Yeah, that picture you sent me the other night at sunset was awesome.
Oh, let me switch this. Oh, Lordy.
So what's on your mind today, Patrick?
Switching from this speaker system, which I can't seem to do. Anyway, and you can hear me pretty well, right? I have two things on my mind. One was a parallel viewpoint, some of my viewpoints that may assist somebody or may not, you know, that parallel some of what you teach and what you say. And then follow up on last night's conversation between you and Dr. Michael, who does, one would you prefer first?
Oh, go for it. Whatever's strongest in your thoughts, Patrick.
Okay. Okay, I see how it should build. First, what I think on the positive side is that everyone and everything is pro-life, not having anything to do with babies or any of that. Just we all things want to expand, all parts of God, all parts of us, all of us, all animals, all people, all spirits, expand and are pro-life, you know, to live. And when we pop in these bodies, all animals on earth that I know of in pro-life have what we call survival instincts, right? So those survival instincts are all on the positive way to say it, pro-life. On the negative way to say it, survival instincts, because they take, whenever they go awry, which is in all of us that I know of, I haven't known anybody didn't have a trauma drama where love wasn't present and where they felt emotionally or physiologically or both that they may not survive. And then that programs, all the negative programs and insanity gets passed down and reminds me of something you said earlier under three generations. So here I am, or all of us, you know, we've got all this genetic fear-based survival coding from our genetics that we take on.
Right.
And then we have whatever we went through individually. So I look at it as originally a good thing. And then my focus is to always get rid of what's gone awry first. So to release or to let go. And then, my view on forgiveness is that there's a program or a belief system of survival instead of love. And then when that's enacted, that goes in action and boom, love disappears. The real person, the real being, the real spirit, that which we are to begin with, eternal love. And our whole job from my perspective is to re-become that being, to let go of all the crazy dream stuff that we dreamed here that we think is really real to survive and et cetera, and just become love that we already are.
Let go of the hostility and fear and step into being.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you on that 2,000%.
All right. So then I was thinking when I was listening to the program last night, first I listened to my friend, then I listened to you, and Michael from Texas, and then you, Michael. And it brought up thoughts for me. What it brought up for me in my experience of being a healer, mostly an intuitive body-mind worker, I always work to structurally balance the body and align it into a higher posture, which I think one of my postural teachers originally said, who taught mostly actors and actresses used to use it, where they pull a string up from your head, F.M. Alexander, said you'll never reach your full potential unless you stand up straight. But the reason for all these years I figure we can't stand up straight is simply because the body-mind is going to express what it's going through, what it reacts to, what it feels. So in expressing its feelings, body language always portrays the feeling. And if it's not portraying, like if you feel depressed or down, if it's not portraying a down chest and a down head, and it's standing up straight, then it's going to have a bunch of muscular tension to be able to do that. Covering up the depressed feeling and maybe, you know, showing some anger or defensiveness or not even feeling no feeling. You know, so that we don't have to feel the feelings underneath that muscular armory. So all the body work I ever did, what I noticed was when I free the person to a higher posture, more alignment, and I consider that to be to their highest level of their spirit inflow too, to the love they are, if they had achieved forgiveness or release of whatever they'd achieved in that line of forgiveness, that held. So it was a quick way to get a person to be free on a physical level of that which had impacted the physical body, representation of the long-term belief systems that jammed it up. And I always saw it as a restriction of energy and blood. Same thing to me. It's just two different levels. They flow or they don't flow.
Yep.
And when they don't flow, there's no life. So stasis is death and movement is life.
Right.
So I always saw that, and what I found on the other side was if I freed a person, myself included, or I did posturing and center, what I called centerline balancing, and I got into a perfectly aligned posture and went to a high-level meditation, et cetera, that let go when I went back into action and earth, you know, belief systems that I got reactive to. And that happened the same thing for anybody else. It's like, but it gave an opportunity to experience this higher level. And when I was listening to our friend from Texas, he's a heck of a healer. He's got a heck of a diagnostic thing that's just unbelievable. And I'm so glad that he came into Avacyn, because my viewpoint on Avacyn is the same thing. I'll reapply it to the Avacyn. So from the body work I always did, the Avacyn's, you said it was physical forgiveness. What I look at is whatever has been forgiving, that's still, because things on the physical level are very dense and they take time unless you move them. So I'd move the fascia and move the muscles and unbind all the stuff and the energy flows would flow and the person would get higher and I'd get higher, blah, blah, blah. And then it goes back if you have things that are counter to that. So the machine takes and assists person to do the same thing, body work or energy work, or it's actually blood work, supposedly. But it's all parallel. It's all different levels of the same thing. So it opens up and goes from the defensive survival system to the one that has love and joy. And it helps a person to let go of what's not of love that's been accomplished already. So it's extremely healing in that sense. Then on the sense that, okay, what hasn't been forgiven is going to come back. Each day it's used, every day, it's like you're getting body work every day. You're getting emotional work every day at an unconscious level. You're moving from that stress, fight or flight, kill or be killed type stuff. And that, I think, is stronger on an emotional level than it is on a physical level for most of us. You know, you're moving from it and you're getting used to being released from it, just like you do in a posturing, like the centerline balancing or a good meditation. Release yourself from your mind that has all this junk in it, and you're released, and you're getting used to. So I think it takes time for the machine to assist that, just like it takes meditation. The more you do it over time, the more you can, you know, allow. I think it's important what you said yourself about what I don't do too much when I'm talking, is when you are writing, you write slow. That gives space for your intuition to come in, for you not just come from old mind and programming. And that's where you get these revelations. And you've done that so well over so many years. But I think that's a key factor. I think I'll learn to speak slower and gap time for intuition to come. Because everything I'm saying now is from our, you know, memory rote decisions that have already been made. They're not, they may have been intuitive one time, but they're now just from that, as long as I'm talking this fast. So I'm extremely happy on the progress we're all making, and that's all I have to say.
Cool. Well, that was an interesting conversation last night. For those who, of course, weren't there, it was a practitioner's meeting on the device called the Avicen, and they have a gentleman who's doing thermography, has read 25,000 different people's thermography reports, where they measure basically heat movement throughout the body, which of course is a reflection of circulation, and the Avicen is designed to enhance microcirculation. And so the Avicen folks are very excited about the fact that this fellow's come on board and what he's seeing happen with the device. And and then the conversation moved into the direction of forgiveness, and that forgiveness is about removing the blocks, and the Avicen is kind of about energetically providing the kind of vitality that allows the blocks to move on a physiological level. So they're a perfect complement to each other. So that's kind of where Patrick was going with that, and I'm with you, Patrick. I think we've got a new, a pretty cool diagnostic tool to go hand in hand that reflects the changes that occur with the Avicen, and I'm excited to see it, and I'm excited to at the receptivity that there is in that practitioner community for understanding forgiveness and moving it forward in the world. So, pretty sweet.
I have two more inputs I'd like to put in.
Sure.
One was is that, if I remember this right, they are able to, this is the platform, they can diagnose anything that may be happening 7 years in advance, 7 to 10 years. So they had a client that was severe, vascularly compromised, and that's not good. They use the Avicen 3 times a day. 30 minutes, 15 each hand. And after so many months, I forget how many, you know, probably 3 to 6, something like that. But then that person went to absolutely no show of medium or even light problem. It all went away. For me, that's extremely important.
Yeah, the vascular
important,
release that occurred. It's powerful.
The vascular release. But to know that it happened on a major vascular level, because we talk about microcirculation. But that was talking about the whole vascular system, all the stuff that would be blocked from cholesterol, et cetera. So, again, back to my other viewpoint, that means that that person either had completed that amount of forgiveness and was released from the laws of cause and effect and resonance that plays out on that, or they go ahead, they finished it up while they were on the Avicen, and or if they haven't finished any of the forgiveness they needed to do, it'll start to work against their vascular system again, which is the flow of life. Life is in the blood. What's the other thing that came up for me? Oh, yeah. For me, when I look at, you know, getting rid of the major things every time they come up, you know, let's get rid of them, let's process them, let's let them go. Also, what I noticed for myself was that a lot of us judge ourselves for our judgments against others. Judge not, least you be judged, and so we're all guilty. But the fact is, for me, for myself, and others can see how this applies to them. Whatever we built in our ego of what we think is a good thing to do, what we think is right and wrong and good about ourselves, anybody who's not doing that, we have at an unconscious level or maybe a conscious level, either one, a judgment against them. So me, I pride myself, blah, blah, you know, in that ego level, that I move fast, think fast, and I found that to be great for stitching time, saves mine, for saving lives in the military, for getting things done. So I think quick, tell me something, something, make a decision, do it, take care of it. But I find that, you know, I judge people originally a couple of years back, and I'm still working with it, that didn't do that, or people who weren't on time, who stole time from me or other people. I had automatic judgment, you know, that's not good. But I kept working with it, and I noticed that, oh, yeah, it's not just these particular things. It's anything I think is good about me or my decisions in life, I automatically have a judgment against others. And so what I've been working with, as they get identified, is to let them go and know that whatever I think is right in my world, my reality, that's for me and me alone. And I have to unjudge everything for everybody else that I hold to be better. It's not better. They're right in their reality, and then they're saying they're doing exactly what they need to be doing for who they are and where they're growing. And my job is to let go of any judgment I have, especially my own, about, you know, reflecting, to just love them right where they're at, to be the love that I am, or and let that love be my beingness, to just be without my judgments, just let them go and just be there and listen and support them where they are. And I always found that that's where people have the opportunity to, and have always changed amazingly in front of my eyes or even at a distance, when I accepted them where they were at, met them where they're at. And I have one weird, far-out example. Myself and remember Aaron had, we knew a girl, a preacher's daughter, and we both tuned in and said, this beautiful girl that was brought up to play the piano and do all these wonderful things and all these, you know, just like somebody would come out at a cotillion and brought up, wants to be a porn person. And we both got it, and then we decided we'd go ahead and just accept that. As soon as we accepted it, without ever talking to her, without ever saying anything, without ever confronting it, it changed instantaneously within, you know, we accepted it within the week, and within a few days, it was totally gone. Interesting. Wish I could apply it all.
Only in the space. Well, it's the practice, isn't it? That's the work. Shifting that automatic decision system is a big task, because when you realize, of course, it's got the inertia of a thousand generations behind it. You know, changing its direction is pretty significant. You know, I like to use the example of, you know, we have this huge supertanker out in the middle of the ocean that's going full tilt 20 knots north. And the captain decides, whoops, we made a mistake. We need to be going 20 knots per hour south. How long is it going to take to turn that tanker around? It's not going to just turn to the water in an instant. It's going to take a significant amount of time to get that thing to slow down, make a shift, and turn around in the other direction. And, you know, the judgmental mind, the non-being mind, is kind of the same. It's been going on for spin and development for so long. And the modeling of the world has been such a disaster for most people that, you know, the choice to do something different and then the ability to do it differently, oftentimes there's a significant time lag. But, you know, the starting point is, I'm ready to do the work. I'm ready to do the work.
I had, for me, my main thing where I get my reflections for the problems I have, of course, is through my relationship, much appreciated. But it was, I think, sparked about 4.5 years ago by some family things. And for both of us, we had, from my perspective, an almost heavenly relationship for 17, 18 years, something like that. And then all of a sudden, the hell started breaking loose, and I thought, oh, bye. We're bringing up our stuff now. Maybe it's because when you're older, you can't hold it down anymore. But for whatever reason, my main process that I found was is that when someone raises their voice, up goes my, and this is like a so-called PTSD military, but it's multiple things. Up goes my blood pressure, up goes my heartbeat for about four and a half hours. And my reactivity is extremely fast and defensive. And then late, you know, over the, I did things a couple of years and I've started making breakthroughs with a PTSD counselor lately. She helps me get insights. And my cat helped me out because if I've been trying to count to 10 before I say anything or don't say anything at all, just listen. The other person is just, as I took it before as an attack, therefore I was ready and not in a good space for him at all. I couldn't do it. Then I just breathe, sit, still try to center, and know, try to know that they are just expressing their pain and their suffering, and listen and be there for them. But when it escalates and I get yelled at or, you know, told bad things, you know, it kind of gets difficult after a while, or shortly, depending on what's done and said,
right?
Yeah. My wife was telling me as I was practicing not reacting, every time we got a little cat about 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it would reach its paws out with its nails, you know, and try to grab my hand, and I would jerk back faster than it could reach out. And my normal ED reactions that I was so proud of, that caused me so many problems. So Jersey kept saying, don't do that. Don't jerk back. You know, then you won't get hurt. And I kept trying, but I couldn't do it. And then finally, one day, I jerked back, and she already had a little claw in me. I lost on the second week. It was very painful for about 3 days, having that ripped open. And then the next time she did it, I was able to breathe and, oh, okay, honey, put your claws back in. She's been doing it ever since. It's been wonderful. And one step closer to letting go of reactivity.
Cool. Good work. Breathing with you, my friend. Well, anything else on your mind for today?
No, I have nothing else on my mind.
All right. Well, have a blessed day, then. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate
you. All right.
You.
Lots
thank
of love. Blessings. Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Well, hey there, Miss Jeannie. It looks like we've got about 7 minutes left. Do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. So we have got time, even with the outro, we've still got 5 minutes. That's time for a quick question. So push one and ask it.
Let's go for a quick question. And if nobody's got a quick question, if you are ready to take your work to the next level, Friday evening at 7 o'clock, we're going to begin a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Workshop via Zoom. So you can do this in the comfort of your own home. We'll send you a Zoom link. Friday night will start at 7 o'clock Eastern Time and go until, depending on the amount of process and how many people are there, somewhere between 9 and 9:30. And then at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, we'll start again. And we'll go through to sometime probably, you know, depending how much process work happens, sometime between probably 5 and 6, maybe a little earlier, as we do Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. So we'll introduce the Mind Shifter tool. We'll show you a system for selecting what Mind Shifter to work with and invite you to do some writing. We'll do some process work around that. And then Saturday morning, we'll step into a little more process work, find out, and we'll give you an assignment for the evening to do some more writing. And then we'll do some processing with that in the morning and step into the Still Point Breathing process. So if you're interested in joining us to do that, the cost of the weekend is $125. And you can drop an email to Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. You'd certainly be welcome to drop her a note, give her your phone number and name, and If you're interested at all, call and we'll get you registered. And it's a powerful process. It's a tool we've been using. I developed back, kids were really small, so it's 37, 38 years ago, something like that. And been using it ever since, and it's just watched it do profound things in people's lives. And so we're going to be doing that via Zoom. We've actually done two intensives in the last year where we did the mind shifters and soul point breathing process online via Zoom, and it worked very well. So we're doing our first independent workshop this Friday night and Saturday. So if you're wanting to join us, drop Jeanie an email, Jeanie at whyagain.org. And we'll look forward to you being part of the process. Other than that, if you've got a thought or a question for us, push one. Let's have a conversation.
And the flyer for that is on our website. You can go to scroll down to events. It's there. Or you can go to news, and it's there. And it's got all the date, the time, the cost, and a brief description of it. And Michael's phone number.
Yeah. So if you want to jump on the website, whyagain.org, and just scroll down the home page to events, that will link you to the flyer. We'll explain the mind shifters process and soul point breathing. And we can set you up to come and play with us on Friday night and all day Saturday.
And if you're on our mailing list, we emailed out a newsletter yesterday. If you did not get it, check your spam box. If you still did not get it, go to our website and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page where it says join our mailing list and click on that. It'll automatically add you so that you'll get it from now on.
Cool. Of course, if you want to access the forgiveness work, you're welcome to go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can download the forgiveness process worksheet from our website, print it off, and use it. You can actually live do the process on the website, and or the world's only forgiveness app is in your app store on your phone, whether you've got an Android or an iPhone. If you go to your app store and just type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Heartland, all one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app, and you can actually do two different versions of the worksheet process right there on your phone. There's also a copy of the Klingon game for kids to introduce them to forgiveness. And Jeanie has just recently done an upgrade to the app, so she's added an additional component, and that is my commitment from the Healing Through Relationships workshop. So you can find that all on the app, and in the meantime, we hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life, and we appreciate you being part of our conversation. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeanie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.